This is Taking Care in Business, a podcast that dives into the topic of corporate social responsibility from many different perspectives. Host Vicki Bolson is the founder and CEO of Bolson Group, a unified marketing company located in Indianapolis. Bolson Group is the first B Corp certified company in Indiana, but Vicki understands that you don't have to be certified in corporate social responsibility in order to use business as a force for good. Join Vicki as she talks about why it's always worthwhile to take care in business.
Hey, Sawyer, how are you today?
Oh, doing great. Excited to be back for another episode. It's going nice.
I know. I am too. I know that I think our audience knows we tape these, and it's okay if we're telling them that we tape them and they air a couple weeks later. Oh, yeah. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because how about the snow?
Oh, yeah. It's been crazy this week.
Do you like snow?
Oh, yeah. Being from Michigan, like I grew up around the snow and everything, and then it's kind of sad sometimes being in Indiana, we don't get as much, but this definitely felt like being back home and getting snow days. We were online for class a couple of days this week.
Well, I love it too. I feel like if it's going to be cold, then bring on the snow. Just bring it on. Snow all you want. Somebody told me when I said that a couple of weeks ago that the day of the first snow, whatever day of the month that is, that that's how many snow days remain. And I think it was like January, it was late in January, like the 29th or the 30th. And so technically we may have snow until February 28th then. Mm. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, me too.
And I love to go play in the snow too. So
Anyway,
if it's not snowing while you're listening to this, I'm sorry, you're probably glad. But anyway, back for another episode, and I want to thank our sponsors, Selflessly in Charge, for making it possible. Selflessly is a software platform that helps companies start, grow, and record their philanthropic giving programs. And Charge is a sponsorship marketing agency. And as I've mentioned in the past, both the one of the co-founders of Selflessly, and the founder of Charge are going to be guest hosts on future episodes. And so we'll get to talk a little bit more about these great tools for your CSR programs and growing them. So thanks to them. But let's get to our guest today. I have wanted to meet John McDonald for a really long time now. I've heard about him through so many different circles. You know, I'll talk to someone about a client relationship and then they're mentioning next. And then I talk to someone just as, you know, hey, I want to meet you, and they mention him. So I'm super thrilled that he's here today. And because I haven't met him or talked to him before, this is the first we're going to do this together, I had to do some research on him. And the one thing that I noticed that I loved was on their website, their description of what they do. I'm just going to read it word for word because I love it. It says, "We are experienced entrepreneurs who help visionaries shape their ideas, craft them with the repeatable process, and move them forward with capital and talent." And if you think about that, I'm sure that all the dots will be connected in our conversation with him, because it really explains what they do. And then they're we are the studio by entrepreneurs, for entrepreneurs, and with entrepreneurs is just so cool. If you're an entrepreneurial, you know how meaningful that is, that, you know, to surround yourself with like-minded people really helps you, you know, individually as an entrepreneur to grow and expand. And so I love this whole idea and I can't wait to talk about it. So, and I also want to ask, I was in looking at John's LinkedIn profile, I wanted to ask him a personal question. So I'm going to introduce him and then I'm going to ask that, and then we're going to get going. So welcome, John. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, really excited to be here. Thank you for that amazing introduction. Usually people read my bio, which was written by my mother and is way too long. So that was great. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. So in my stalking of you, which I really wasn't stalking, but it's kind of fun to use that word, I noticed that you are on a board or something with the Hamilton Southeastern School District.
Yeah, I am actually. There's a advisory board that they have, and yeah, among other crazy things that I do, that's one of the things that I do. I care. My kids have all been through HSC schools, and I just, you know, felt compelled to give back in some way. I'm deeply grateful of what they did for them. So
That's cool. Well, my oldest daughter, who's graduated, went there. Okay. And then my middle child actually commuted to Pendleton High School, long story. Oh, wow. And then my youngest is in the district, but she goes to Fishers instead of HSE.
Yes. Well, that's the big rivalry, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know your kids. What ages? I mean, I hate to ask you this if you don't want to tell it on the air, but.
It's fine. Well, two of them are over 21 and are in college now, but still living at home because of the remote stuff, you know?
Yes.
They hate that. And then my youngest is a senior this year at HSC. So we're just about done with.
Okay, good. Yeah, you are. You're going to be an empty nester next year, unless they go remote for another.
I'm trying. I might just buy them another nest.
Get them. Are you going to have three in college at once?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Isn't that lovely?
So. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I spaced it out. So I will only have two in college at once for 1 year.
Yeah. Smart. Smart.
Yeah. It worked out. It worked out really well. But anyway, so we have that in common,
yeah,
our kids in the same school district. But anyway, so the other thing we have in common, I think, is just, you know, this small circle in our community of people who are interested in CSR and, mm-hmm. you know, social impact and using yeah. business as a force for good. And so, like I said, I really wanted to meet you. And let me start off by asking you, when do you recall being the first time that you even heard the term CSR?
That's a great question. And it was from the team at Selflessly. I'd understood the concepts and put them into use, you know, as a CEO of tech companies, but I didn't have a label for it. And I didn't really appreciate it as, I guess you could call it a discipline or a concept set until, mm-hmm. You know, they, Josh Driver there, told me about this idea that he had, to build a platform to enable this. And I'm like, I love everything about that. You know, it really hits every button that I can think of and what, you know, what is relevant today. You know, what employees really want and need from their employers and what customers really want to see in the companies that they're working with. And it just hit every button. And that's when I started being educated about it, you know, a little bit more. So,
yeah, it's wild because I had not heard the term, mm-hmm. but like you, I think I was operating with that mindset and yeah. the way I was, you know, setting up my business and engaging with the community. And when I say the community, I don't just mean the community. I mean, I'm the community of vendors that I work yeah, with and yeah. clients and such. So, but that word just really sort of took off, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And it's like a buzzword and everybody's, and rightfully so, jumping on board of really looking at it for their company, I think. And if it is, you know, something they're really considering when they're setting up their processes and culture and such.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing to behold. I want to hopefully believe that people aren't just wrapping themselves in a flag because it's the trendy thing to do and that they really mean it.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's sustainable in your organization if you're just faking it. So
absolutely.
So I'm sure that anybody who's attempting to do that will quickly fall out of practice because they don't have uh-huh. They don't really mean it, but it is a great yeah. thing to see. I agree.
Yeah, no, I think, and I totally agree on what you just said. You know, people have said, what a great marketing tool being B Corp certified. And it's like, well, it's really not a tool. It's something to talk about, but it's not, I did not do it. So it would be a tool. Right. So I definitely agree. So is that like, what was the, I know your background is with consulting and IT and that, but what got you to the point where you thought, I'm starting this entrepreneurial studio?
Sure. I'm happy to tell that story. I tell it a lot. So with apologies to people that may have heard it before, my previous job was CEO of a company called Clear Object in Fishers. And that is an Internet of Things company. And we were fortunate to build that company at just the right time when that was becoming a thing. And so we were able to sell that to some private equity firms about 2 years ago. And so, as these things go, when you sell your company to another organization, it's really only a matter of time before, they're going to want to take it a different direction or bring in different leadership. It's just how it works, and you've got to be comfortable with that if you are doing that. So it forced me to start to think about what I wanted to do next. And, I said to myself, I could go start another company. I've certainly got ideas. Everybody has them. I could go work for a company, I guess, but I don't think I'm manageable, honestly. But then I started thinking about these experiences that I had, at Clear Object. I would never say no to a startup entrepreneur who wanted to have a meeting. I always said yes. Probably much to the irritation of a lot of the staff there, I was constantly having these meetings, but I just felt like it's really hard. And if there is a mistake that I made that I can help you avoid, I'd be all too happy to tell you about it. Right. But there was a real pattern to these meetings. They would always be like, I had this idea, and I told my wife about it and she thought it was a great idea. And that's the extent to which I vetted the idea. And then I dreamed up 20 markets that I could sell it to as if that was good. And then I leaned on a couple of friends to build me a prototype of my idea, which I then started calling my minimum viable product without any substantive change, right? And then I showed it to some potential customers and they said, this is great, but it's got to do these six things before I'll buy it. And I don't have any money to do those six things. And my wife is telling me to get a real job. So, what I'm really looking for is an investor who will write me a check basically so I can keep working on this project. And then they're frustrated that they're not finding any investor to write them the check. And the reason is because no investor will ever write you that check, because if you peel it all away, you have very little, you kind of have nothing. You got no go-to-market strategy. You got no real customers. You got no understanding of who your target market is. You kind of have nothing. And so I just got to thinking, wouldn't it be great if there was an agency, whose job it was to help them avoid this, right? And it would certainly, we'd have a better success rate in building startup companies in Indiana and locally. But also, we'd maybe turn out more entrepreneurs, which we desperately need, So that's when I started researching these things called venture studios, which frankly I'd paid no attention to, honestly. And there's a few hundred of these around the world, but they are organizations that are designed to birth startup companies. That's the point of them. And investors love them because they tend to de-risk deals. You end up with a better startup company, for lack of better words, isn't to invest in.
Yeah.
Than if you were trying to do it yourself. And then for the founders, it often acts like a co-founder in a way, a venture studio, right? And there are different models of how much the studio is involved and that sort of thing that are out there. But that was the whole idea. And so as I studied the model, there were some things that I liked about it. I liked that it had a process at its core. Right, you're following a process, so you can use that as a benchmark to see where we're at, and it made very logical sense to me. Oftentimes, the studio will have a companion fund, so they have an investment vehicle, that they can put in. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. But then there were some things that I didn't like about it. One of the things that I observed is that many venture studios like to come up with their own ideas. which there's nothing wrong with that, but there's not a lot of room in that picture for anybody else's ideas. And if they do accept outside ideas, most of the time what they want to do is buy them from you. Right. They want to invest or buy, you know, 80 or 90% of your company. Right. Which is fine, you know, if that's what your objective is, but it just kind of makes you like suddenly an employee of your own idea. You know what I mean? And then they'll often have a big team of people, really smart people, very capable people that know branding and marketing and accounting and business operations, which is great, but they're all working on 10 things. So if your thing doesn't work, well, I got 10 other things I'm working on, right? And knowing what I do about what it takes to succeed in a startup company, I just couldn't figure out who in this model was incented to crush it, right? It basically, everybody's kind of an employee, you know what I mean? And so I got to thinking, wouldn't it be great if there was a studio that was actually run by the entrepreneurs themselves? In other words, if there was a question, let's just try to figure out an answer that's in the favor of the entrepreneur, right? In other words, let's lean into how we can empower them versus exploit them, you know, or just employ them, you know? And so I started sharing some of those ideas with some of my fellow entrepreneurs, and we started looking around for a model that we could emulate, you know, or just crib, and we couldn't find one. So we just decided to do it, to build it. And so that's what Next Studios is. And so there are some things that we take from the model process fund. We'll talk about that too in a minute, because that's unique as well, I think. But again, it's a studio built by, run by, benefiting for the entrepreneurs that are part of it. So what does that mean in practice? Well, first of all, we're a B Corp. So we're certainly first of a kind B Corp venture studio, at least around here. Mm-hmm. Our charter benefit in our corporate charter is to lift the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Indiana.
Love it.
Baked right in. The structure of the organization is a partnership, not unlike a professional partnership, like a law office or a doctor office. So there's no CEO. We are managing entrepreneurs.
I love that. Your title. Yeah.
So it's really just a partnership of entrepreneurs, right? Uh-huh. So it's a B Corp LLC. So we had to go to Delaware to get that. Indiana law doesn't allow that, so I put that on my to-do list. So there's that. And so we manage the affairs of the studio, if you will, as a team. We don't have a big staff of people. The people we do have, we call partners, and their job is not to do the work for the company. Their job is to sort of serve as ombudsman, to understand what the company needs. And instead, what we did was we developed relationships with an array of local small service providers who are all entrepreneur-led small companies as well. And we want the company to use them, right? And not pay us to do the work for them, but we kind of serve as coordinator, right? And helping them manage the work and make sure that it gets done. That helps lift those boats, but also we think gets a better outcome, you know, and more efficiently. You know, just stuff like that. So it's designed around trying to be a collective and bring entrepreneurs together and share the burdens and the benefits of building startup companies.
Okay, so John, I have a question. If I have an idea, which I do,
sure,
yeah. And it's for a software platform, but yeah. I am not an IT person,
yeah.
What would it be like me wanting to come to Next Studios and see if you can help me?
Yeah, so I'll first of all address the first part of what you said. Everybody has ideas. They're free, right? What it takes is capital, talent, and place to turn an idea into a company, and it's in that order, right? You raise money to hire people, and then once you hire them, you want to keep them, and they need a place to collaborate and work. And that's it's in that order. So really, well, the job of the venture studio is to layer on those things to your idea and provide you the entrepreneurial support that you need along the way. And so generally speaking, that happens in four stages. Almost all venture studios, at least the ones we looked at, have four stages to their process. I don't know why, and they call them different things. I think it's because it corresponds really well to the types of capital that you get along the way and who it's coming from.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But so we have four phases too, and I'll say what they are and then I'll explain them. It's ideation, productization, launch, and scale. Okay. So first, ideation. Ideation is about the idea. It's pressure testing the idea. It's making sure that it's a good idea and that it'll actually solve a problem for somebody. So we have tools that we use for this. We do design thinking workshops where we get potential customers in and we pick their brains. We do feedback workshops with, again, potential customers. We do branding exercises, initial branding exercises, trying to understand how we bake in our value proposition and what we serve and why we do it into who we say we are. We help build a prototype of your idea, which is not really the product. It's just something you can share, three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. A lot of that work is, frankly, on whiteboards and PowerPoint charts and Zoom calls. We're not spending a lot of money here at this stage, and that's for a reason, because we don't know if the idea is any good yet, right? So who wants to load on a bunch of money on the idea until we're sure that it is? Usually the money for this type of work comes from what you call friends and family in the venture capital business, or sometimes what they say is friends, family, and fools. The fools being, the fools being you, the entrepreneur, right? Putting your own money into your own idea, which is foolish. And oftentimes this work is sponsored. You see economic development organizations or corporations or whatever, you know, saying, I'm going to run a sprint week, you know, for women founders, or, you know, that's really what's happening at that point, right? You're trying to put shape around the idea. So with your idea, we would start by running through some of these exercises and tools to pressure test whether or not you've got a good idea and you really understand who your buyer is and why they would buy this platform from you and the like. And we probably seek to get that work sponsored by someone who cared about entrepreneurs in Indianapolis or women entrepreneurs or whatever it happened to be, right? Second stage is productization. This is when you take the idea and turn it into a product, right? The goal here is to build what's called the minimum viable product, or MVP. The MVP is not everything your product's ever going to do, but it's enough. It's enough to get it in the hands of actual paying customers or customers and get their feedback and understand what they're saying about it, right? You use that to shape the product and also to build what's called your go-to-market strategy. And how are we going to launch this? You know, knowing what we know about our customer and knowing what our product is able to do, what's our game plan for launching? This money is usually what's called angel investors. These are really just high net worth individuals making a bet. They're making a bet on your idea, right? They've seen enough out of the ideation and are watching and seeing the feedback that's coming from the customers. And they're placing an early bet that your thing is going to be a runaway success with you and your team. And then what that leads to is stage three, which is launch. This is when you launch your product and your go-to-market strategy. And this is when you hire sales reps and customer service reps and continue to work on the product, obviously, along the way, but you're now launching your go-to-market strategy and trying to gather your initial customer set. And if it works and you get through that successfully, you get to the last stage, which is scale, right? This is when you build a scalable, sustainable company around, you know, what you've been able to accomplish. In Indiana, and I would say in the Midwest in general, a rough order of magnitude is you add a zero to the amount of money required to get it done right at each stage. So if ideation costs you $10,000, it'll take $100,000 to turn it into a product and $1 million to launch it and $10 million to scale it.
Oh, right? That's interesting.
It's a very common rule of thumb, and it plays out over and over and over again. And so many people have the $10,000 in this scenario in their pocket, either their friends and family or themselves. And so they'll muscle their way through ideation. And then where they get stuck is in productization, because that's now real money. And I don't have $100,000, and I got to pay a developer, and I got to pay a guy to, you know, machine it or whatever it is. And that's when they tend to start to need their first investors, which are these, as I said, usually these angel investors. So that's how the process kind of works and what it's called.
That is so interesting. So that sparked two questions. One is professional service companies. If it's not a product, mm-hmm. are you engaging with professional service type companies too?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be a thing you can hold. It doesn't even have to be a piece of software, right? It's really about an idea, and the idea is, the intention is to figure out what problem does the idea actually solve for somebody. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be techie. It doesn't even have to be sophisticated, right? It just has to solve an actual problem for a real customer. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if that problem is solved by performing a service for them, that's fair game, right? It doesn't have to be like a thing that you hold or you log into.
Do you think that zero at the end still holds? I guess it kind of would, right? Because I'm thinking back to when I started my professional service company. You know, you need to have money in the bank to make payroll before customers pay you. So I guess maybe you do kind of have to have the same.
I think it does. I think, I mean, the only time where we see that bend a little bit is, and maybe a little bit more expensive, is when you're dealing with a physical device. A thing that you have to have made, and particularly if there's a thing that connects to some software in the cloud or whatever, those could be more expensive, especially if that thing is like a medical device or something that's like regulated. Now you're talking maybe a little bit more money, but no, it's a pretty good rule of thumb, and it tends to hold true for almost any business that you put together.
So since you're a B Corp, are you finding that the entrepreneurs that are coming to you and your team of entrepreneurs are in that space? Are they in the using business as a force for good space than not?
Absolutely. And I would say at a more meta level, when we hung out our shingle, the first objective was to find some interesting companies that we could work with and help them. Rather than going all the way back to the beginning and doing ideation, we were trying to find some companies that were already kind of in flight that we might be able to go help move forward. The logic behind that being, you know, we thought our story would be better told through them. You know, we started a new venture studio, who cares, you know, but if you could help a company or two and they could say, hey, these guys really helped us knock it out of the park, that just felt like a better story. And so when we did this, we immediately got two LGBT founders, two women founders, two Black founders, many of them doing things in this, you know, corporate social responsibility space. And that was not the design, right? It was not like, oh, let's sit down, you know, and figure out how to create the most diverse group of founders. Really, it wasn't, but it happened. And as we've been thinking about it, you know, the simple answer is that if the traditional venture capital system doesn't deliver for you, you start looking for alternatives, and we look like an alternative, right? And that's probably why that's attractive, right? Mm-hmm. We have had no trouble whatsoever finding potential startup companies and founders and ideas to work with. This has not been an issue. And the hunch was that they were out there. Maybe the hope was they were out there. And but we weren't sure. They're out there, right? There are plenty of them, right?
That's great.
And no worries on the inbound traffic side of the equation, right? So I think, yes, many of the companies are in that space. The founders are definitely of a very diverse group. And I think it's just because we look like an alternative to the regular system, which doesn't necessarily deliver for those kinds of ideas and those kinds of companies and those kinds of founders, regrettably.
That's awesome. It sounds like your positioning is so much more buttoned up than a lot of the other venture studios. And I would imagine, too, that a lot of the venture studios that are out there on the East Coast and the West Coast, and they're not necessarily centrally located in the Midwest.
Yes, there's a few in the Midwest. There's one called High Alpha here in Indianapolis, which is a very high profile one, actually, nationally, which was founded by some former executives from Exact Target, you know, when they sold their company to Salesforce, and they seem to be crushing it. There's a couple in Chicago, you know, but there's not one that we know of in Detroit or Louisville. So it's not like we've hit saturation on this, right? Particularly here in the Midwest. And with respect to them, now somebody will probably write you and tell you we're a venture studio in Louisville, so we'll learn, right? But we're definitely not bumping elbows with people trying to compete with them for deals around here. You know, there's enough for all right now.
Awesome. Well, speaking of entrepreneurs, I don't know. Do you know Cynthia Pizarro from Seaspring?
Yes. Yes, I do. Not well, but I'm definitely aware of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was nominated for our Taking Care in Community segment, which is sponsored by Selflessly. They let us know that she was the nomination this week. And I've met her before. I've been on a couple of groups with her. And I actually interviewed her on episode number 23. So somebody could go way back into the archives and listen to my conversation with her. But she's the president of Seaspring, which is an IT consulting firm. But what I think is really cool is that she's the founder of this software called Ohana. Mm-hmm. And it's a workplace communication engagement software that I've had the demo, and I think it's kind of the best way to describe it is it's kind of like a Facebook for the workplace that keeps teams engaged, connected, and inspired. And so she was our nomination this week for doing great things. And I thought it was fitting that we were talking about entrepreneurs. So
yeah. Great company, great person, great idea.
Yeah, doing good stuff for our community. And, you know, when I say community, I don't just necessarily, you know, because she's not only selling the software to people in Indiana, you know, I mean, anybody can take advantage of Ohana and Seaspring, just as they can Next Studios.
Yes, absolutely.
But what I think is really cool is that in doing this podcast, I just keep, you know, I keep thinking, well, I want to find someone, you know, in this space. And then somebody says, well, you need to talk to this person. And then that leads me to, and it's all this small little, it really is. It's like our own little community.
Oh yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah,
and what I really hope is that, you know, cause like just on this episode, we had, you know, Josh introduced me to you. And Kara Kavinsky too introduced me to you, and then they sponsor, and they got they nominated Cynthia Pizarro from Seaspring, and these are all these companies that are using either their business or their tools or their consulting as a force for good. Mm-hmm. And what I really hope is that we happen to be in Indiana, but I hope that others can find that their people, you know, and whatever community they're in, whether that's a small town or that's a big market, a big DMA, I mean, whatever it is, find your people and find your way to connect with like-minded people. So that's why I'm so glad to have met you, John. And I thank you for coming on Taking Care in Business today.
Yeah, it was my great pleasure. Something. I really enjoyed sharing our story, and thanks for these thoughtful questions and letting us share what we're trying to do here. We hope it works. So,
yeah, I mean, you've been a year and a year. Couple months now.
Yeah.
It sounds, I mean, it's, I love it. I love it. And you did such a good job. I was going to ask some of the questions like, okay, there's workshops and you explained sort of the process. So I didn't have to ask specifics, but if people do want to go and really dig in and review everything that you've shared today, where can they contact you?
Yeah, it's the best place, obviously, is to start with, is like almost everything else is on the web. So our URL is nextstudios.org. It's all one word. And you can send an email to hello@nextstudios.org, and we'd be happy to get back with you on that.
Okay, great. And are you on social media anywhere?
Yes, nextstudios.org is our handle on everything, Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And
awesome.
You can find me there too.
Okay. Well, again, thank you. Sorry that the dogs barked a little.
Part of it. We're all doing it.
And I'll see you along the way somewhere. And thanks to Charge and Selflessly for sponsoring today.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the time today.
I just want to thank Sawyer Benj, our producer, and our show sponsors, Selflessly and Charge. If you'd like to nominate someone for Taking Care in Community, you can visit our website, takingcareinbusiness.com, or email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, or download Taking Care in Business wherever you get your podcasts. If you love Taking Care in Business, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review, or share this episode on your social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Taking Care in Biz. That's Taking Care in Biz, B-I-Z. If you have questions or comments, you can also email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks to our sponsors, Selflessly in Charge. And until next time, take care in business.